Well, howdy all our beautiful piggies. It's another wonderful day here in various parts of the world. We have gotten a request to stop being dumbasses and educate you people for once. So we're gonna do a little pandering today. Yeah, we're gonna do a little pandering, go back to our roots and teach y'all a little something about mass movements, organizing, parties, what works and what doesn't, and such things. So we've got three different little presentations to give you. I'm going to do one on the Black Panthers, and I'll go ahead and start with that, and then we'll get to the other boys in just a little bit. So let's go back to the U.S. civil rights era. I think you probably know the gist of it. You know, rampant police brutality, systemic and cultural racism were completely normal and acceptable to many Americans, more so even than today. And as a result, economic inequality between white and black Americans was pretty severe, to say the least. By the 60s, Martin Luther King Jr. was a household name, often in a less than favorable manner. While he was alive, he had something like a 27% favorable rating compared to 95% today. His crusade of nonviolent mass opposition to racism made him a national talking point, as well as both an inspiration to millions and a criminal to millions more. But while MLK gets most of the books and History Channel specials these days, there was another part of the civil rights movement that's not held in such high regard by modern Americans.
The racists!
Yeah, I was going to say modern Americans, but racists. Yeah, that's a good synonym. anyway, they're not held in such high regard for reasons that will become apparent shortly, if they're not already. The Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, more commonly referred to as the BPP, or simply the Black Panthers, was a revolutionary socialist party intended to combat the rampant racism and inequality black Americans faced at the time. This wasn't just a social group. The Panthers were a proper political party. They had regulations, political education, social programs, armed patrols to protect black citizens from fascist police. They had breakfast programs for black kids. It was a rapidly developing dual power operation where the oppressed minority took matters into their own hands. They quickly gained popularity and expanded beyond Oakland, establishing chapters in cities across the United States. By the late 60s, the party had thousands of members and supporters nationwide. In other words, it was becoming a threat to the white establishment and the ruling class as a whole. But before we get to that, let's take a quick look at their 10-point program, because this is really important, and it's what distinguishes things that are actually organizations or parties or legitimate movements from spontaneous stuff, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And I'm going to paraphrase each point for brevity. 1. Self-determination for the black community. 2. Federally mandated full employment. 3. Economic reparations for the slave trade and continued systemic racism. And they cite the Jews receiving compensation from the Germans here as a precedent. 4. Decent housing for all. 5. Accurate education that exposes, quote, the true nature of this decadent American society. 6. Black men should be exempt from military service in a country that murders other oppressed people around the world. 7. An immediate end to police brutality. This point also urges black Americans to arm themselves to protect their communities. 8. The release of black Americans from jail and prison, as they had not received a fair trial in the racist penal system. 9. All black people should have the right to be tried by a jury of their peers from their communities. And side note for why this was a demand. Back then, the, quote, jury of peers that would be provided to black defendants was almost always 100% white. So there was an antagonistic jury in most of the United States during that time. And number 10, quote, we want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. And then they would go on to quote at length the part in the Declaration of Independence about how sometimes it's necessary to abolish a tyrannical government, which is kind of gangster. So in addition to these 10 points, the Black Panthers also established free breakfast programs, so no child would go to school hungry, health clinics where they wouldn't be waved away by racist doctors, legal aid services to bolster the defense of black people being charged with crimes in a racist system, and educational initiatives, both academic and political. Taken as a whole...
Fucking evil.
Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to why they're considered evil. But taken as a whole, the Black Panthers did pretty much everything right. They had a rigid structure and regulations. They had clearly outlined goals and the means by which they would achieve them. They pursued political education to raise class consciousness among the oppressed, and they took measures to establish for themselves the necessary social services that the existing government refused to provide. So in essence, they embodied what it's meant to be referred to as a government in waiting. That is, a group that is capable of taking the reins and running a society when the existing government fails or is overthrown. But that's a little optimistic. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. First, an organization or party or mass movement has to survive severe state repression. So, how did the Panthers fare in that regard? Well, needless to say, the cops and the feds really didn't like their militant rhetoric and socialist politics. Armed black people walking around keeping an eye on the police didn't sit well with the average white person, even though the Panthers were well within their rights to do so, as they were subject to the Second Amendment like their white counterparts. Of course, black people benefiting from laws white people enjoyed was scary, and that put them on the government's shit list. Over the years, the Panthers faced numerous conflicts with the police, as well as an intense intelligence campaign to undermine and dismantle the party. Infiltration was, and remains to this day, one of the most dangerous threats a socialist organization can face, and the FBI was ruthless in their surveillance, disinformation campaigns, and use of informants and moles. All of this, of course, fell under the COINTELPRO umbrella, which is a subject worth reading about if you're not already familiar. The fruits of this program also contributed to the decline of the party. Key figures, including Huey Newton and Eldridge Cleaver, were arrested and thrown in prison on bogus charges, leading to power vacuums that undermined the resilience of the organization. Then you had the infamous optics problem. Where MLK was able to garner some very useful white support, the Panthers and their militant rhetoric spooked the average white person. And the FBI disinformation campaign stoked those fears by smearing the party as a group of violent and criminal thugs. Of course, outside pressure was only part of the problem. Something we're very familiar with on the modern left also played a key role. Factionalism and petty infighting. That is our number one thing. That is our greatest strength. Of all the things we're good at, that is the thing we are the goodest at, is hating each other, calling each other feds. That's the most frustrating thing. But anyway, how much this was influenced...
But it's also wild when some of us are feds. So it's like,
Exactly. That's the frustrating part. It's like, how can you tell without the struggle sessions and calling people out? But then if you're calling people out and they're not a Fed, then you're like, well, what if you're a Fed? Why are you calling me a Fed? And then it just kind of devolves. So the question there was how much this was influenced by infiltration. And that's the question we have today as well. But the fact remains that the left is absolute dog shit at unity, regardless of the reasons. And the Panthers faced that problem too. Disagreements over tactics and personal rivalries weakened the party significantly over the years. There was also the problem of financing the operation. It's not easy or cheap to run all the social programs the Panthers did, and the money troubles were made worse with having to come up with legal funds and donors pulling their support as public opinion soured under the influence of COINTELPRO propaganda. By the time the late 70s and early 80s rolled around, conservatism was on the rise, Reagan was about to make things way worse, and general liberal sentiment had firmly turned against radical politics. The Black Panther Party officially ceased operations in 1982. So, what worked and what didn't? Well, ideologically and strategically, the Black Panthers did a really, really good job. To this day, I think they might be just the coolest party this godforsaken country has ever produced. They were on the right track. They were building dual power structures, rejecting reliance on the government, practicing good self-defense protocols, educating the masses. That's all good stuff. Where the Panthers failed, and I don't think we can really blame them here, was in their inability to resist infiltration and the undermining of their organization. The U.S. intelligence apparatus is, or at least was back then, it's slightly less so today, but it was incredibly powerful. The feds had nearly infinite funding to pour into counter-revolutionary programs like COINTELPRO, and it stands to reason that the most powerful government on Earth could overcome an upstart party of the oppressed underclass who already faced extreme prejudice from their fellow citizens. The one thing they could have addressed, though, and this is something that every socialist project needs to address, is that factionalism we mentioned. Yes, there will always be disagreements, but guys, come on, you've got bigger things to worry about. Like, bicker later, or at least bicker more quietly. And I think the CPC, the Communist Party of China, actually handles this pretty well. At least publicly.
Oh my God, get them G-Bucks. Get them G-Bucks.
Send them to me, please. I'm ready. You know, they at least publicly show a united front, right? By the time a public vote comes around, you pretty much always see a unanimous decision. which sends us Westoids into a frenzy because, oh, they're brainwashed. But, you know, it's really just because all the debates and struggle sessions have already happened behind closed doors before the vote. It's no different than parenting. If you don't want to present a crack in the armor for your child to exploit, you have to present a unified front. You can worry about the fine details between yourselves when it's advantageous and safe to do so. But presenting opportunities for reactionaries or toddlers to wiggle in and expand is a recipe for disaster. So, RIP Black Panthers, please come back. You guys are so cool. Tremendous loss. But we also have to talk about the things that are similar and different between modern analogs to this movement. So, say, Black Lives Matter. And I can already tell this episode is probably going to run a little bit long, so I'm just going to close out my section with a real quick overview of the difference between the Black Panthers and the Black Lives Matter movement. Hello, dear listener. Editor JT here. This has been a little sneak peek of one of our monthly exclusive Patreon episodes. If you want to hear the rest, support the show, get episodes a week early, and lots of other benefits like access to our Discord, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thedprogram.